Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm here with Stephen Thompson. Hi, Stephen.
Hello, Linda.
Stephen, it's fair to say Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of our favorite shows, right?
Yes, it is one of the very few shows, for example, that my entire family can agree is wonderful.
That's right. Fox canceled Brooklyn Nine-Nine at the end of its fifth season, but much to our delight, NBC picked it up again, and it's about to come back.
That's right. It's coming back for a sixth season, which starts on January 10th, and we thought this would be a nice time to revisit our conversation about it.
And we will be back soon with new episodes, but for now, we're bringing you our 2015 conversation about Brooklyn Nine-Nine, featuring our own Glenn Weldon and our producer emeritus Mike Katziff in the fourth chair. You'll hear that right after this quick break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor, Syfy. From executive producers The Russo Brothers, survival is extra credit in Syfy's new series, Deadly Class. Set in the unsanitized counterculture of the 1980s, a disillusioned teen is recruited into King's Dominion, a secret academy for the deadly arts. Based on the graphic novel by Rick Remender and Wes Craig, Deadly Class premieres January 16th on Syfy. Watch the first episode now at deadlyclass.syfy.com.
It's not that often that we delve into a TV show that's been around for a few seasons, but we're giving it a shot with Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is a Fox comedy that's just entered its third season. It takes place in a, logically enough, Brooklyn police precinct. It has a great big cast, including Andy Samberg as goofball detective Jake Peralta, Andre Brower as the very stern Captain Holt. It's got Terry Crews and Chelsea Peretti, lots more regulars, plus other folks showing up all the time, Mark Evan Jackson, Kyra Sedgwick playing wildly against type. Stephen Root, Sandra Bernhardt, Craig Robinson, Patton Oswalt, so on, so on, so on, so on. It's one of those, right? So we thought that we would have a chat about it. So, Thompson, why don't you talk a little bit about where your family is with Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
My family is absolutely across the board in love with this show, including 11-year-old daughter, 14-year-old son, myself, my girlfriend. Everybody has been able to embrace this show. For me, it scratches a little bit of the Parks and Rec itch.
Logically enough, there is executive producer crossover.
There's a lot of executive producer crossover there. It is not as, what's the word, like warm.
Schmoopy.
Okay, yeah, yes. That's kind of where I'm going. Like, right. I have not been choked up watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It is much more like a knockabout, fun workplace comedy mixed in with lots of like funny running gags, little bits that pay off down the line.
Yeah.
The fact that Jake Peralta is obsessed with Die Hard. I love Die Hard.
Yeah.
I liked this show from its first episode.
Mm-hmm.
I was not
mm-hmm.
slow to embrace it no. once I started watching it.
How about you, Glenn?
Yeah, I went from finding this show enjoyable but missable to unmissable, but that took a while. When I was thinking about my reaction to it, I kind of bored myself because it's exactly the same reaction I had to Parks and Rec. It's exactly the same reaction I had to the American Office, which is, it takes a while for this show to find itself. And that makes sense because the process of discovering the show and who these characters are is the same one that we go through, that the directors go through, that the writers go through, that the actors go through. They have to find it. They have
and
to
you're
find
finding
that chemistry.
Strengths that sometimes,
yeah.
until people have played around with them for a while. I mean, I think the American Office playing around with Mindy Kaling
right.
was a great example of that, where they were playing it kind of that she was a little bit mousy,
mm-hmm.
and they put her there kind of first to be offended, and she very much was dressed down, and it wasn't until then all of a sudden you get that kind of turned-up chatterbox character that eventually really became her thing.
Absolutely.
But not until she had been doing it for a while.
It's about this first reaction you have. My reaction to any kind of sitcom is I'm listening for the jokes. I'm listening for the writing.
Right.
And there comes a moment, and it's usually about midway through the season, when the writing hits me one way, but the performance, the delivery of the line
right.
makes it three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly you get a sense of this character you didn't have before. Because it's kind of like reading a graphic novel where you just kind of skim from word balloon to word balloon. And it takes a while for your eye to really latch on to the art and the imagery and how the tension between the art and the word is actually working. So here, there's moments, and it happened a lot in the first season, when all of a sudden this character comes alive because the actor sort of owns it and the writers are writing for the strengths of that particular person.
Right.
I also think the show endeared itself to me with the very smart hiring of Mark Evan Jackson.
For sure.
As Holt's husband. That's mm-hmm. just that the casting. We've talked about before about how casting can endear you to a show.
There is a real genius to the casting.
Yeah,
of
it reflects
the show,
a sensibility, and if you share that sensibility, it just works.
How about you, Mike? You know, Mike and I were talking about this a little bit, about how you get at why you like a sitcom,
yeah.
besides I just like it. There's a lot to say about why this show works. So where did you come out, Mike?
So I think the comparisons, obviously, to Parks and Rec and The American Office are are right. I think what makes the show work for me is the relationships between the characters. They pair them off in the most logical ways, and then as it goes on, they get the odd pairings of people who don't mix together to do something that brings out a different comedic side to both of them. Obviously, from the get-go, Jake Peralta and Captain Holt's antagonism was a big part of the show's tension in the comedy, and he's a goofball, and Holt is so flat that he's almost playing it as a drama. Andre Bauer is playing as a drama. He's in a completely different cop show. But as time goes on, when they pair together, it brings out something completely different out of both of them, where they can both be weird in their own specific ways. As Andre Bauer continues that performance, his completely flat, robotic joylessness that is built into his persona gets teased out little bits where there's little quirks in there that are so bizarre that anybody, including any robot human, would think of. And it's just so smart where you see Amy and Holt as her being sort of the teacher's pet, like Tracy Flick in Election, kind of sucking up. But she can also sort of be weird and quirky and bizarre in addition to sort of being like the goody two-shoes at the same time.
Absolutely.
So there, you see more depth as it goes on. And I think that's just like the writers finally learning how to write for these characters.
Right.
Yeah, they do a wonderful job of doling out the payoffs with each character over, you know, over time. And one of my favorite examples of that really is with Ray Holt, who they start early on. You get one little quick flashback to Ray Holt as a hard-bitten 80s detective with hair and a mustache and calling people punk. And you start to get a sense like they're going to keep very judiciously doling out these moments over the course of this series in ways that are going to get funnier and funnier and funnier. And they've done a very nice job loosening him up very gradually while keeping him the same character. And the casting, you talk about casting, Andre Bauer, Homicide, Life on the Streets, Andre Bauer, like Emmy-laden, serious dramatic actor Andre Bauer, playing a serious character and then letting him show how unbelievably funny he is.
Everyone, I'm your new commanding officer, Captain Ray Holt.
Speech!
That was my speech.
Yes?
I was hula hooping. Kevin and I attend a class for fitness and for fun.
Oh my God.
I've mastered all the moves. The pizza toss, the tornado, the scorpion, the oopsie doodle.
Why are you telling me this?
Because no one will ever believe you.
No.
No.
It's impossible to talk about the great things about this show without a little bit of a detour into how lovely it is that the cast of this show and the characters on the show are as diverse as they are.
And effortlessly
not,
so.
Effortlessly so. Not in a kind of studied thing that makes you feel like it's been kind of concocted this way to stand for this, but in a way that's like in a Brooklyn police precinct, you would run into a mix of people. Particularly in the case of Holt, the fact that he's playing a black gay police detective is not in and of itself a joke, right? Mm-hmm. That's not the joke. But it's also not irrelevant. He'll tell people right out, particularly he's had these conversations with his nemesis, who is this woman played by Kira Sedgwick, where he'll just tell her straight out, I was an out gay police detective, you know, in the 80s or whenever whenever he came out. And he sort of says, therefore, I'm much tougher than you. And it's clear that that's all true. It's clear that his his untouchable personality and his unflappable nature has been both necessary because of and possible because of specific things about who he is as a person, not all of which has have anything to do with the fact that he's a gay black police detective, but some of them do.
Yep.
There's specificity, but there's also just character stuff, right?
It informs sort of like his professionalism, which I think across the board, this is a show where we're sort of in a time where cops doing a bad job is all over the news, and it dances like this line of, if you show cops screwing up too much and being stupid, it's not a good look. And they dance the line of them being funny and crazy and have fun, but also at the end of the day, they all kind of do their jobs great. Right. Even like the two dullard side cops
have talent.
Yeah. They just are lazy.
Right.
But they show that they all are talented and good at what they do.
Yeah, it's more a sitcom than it is a cop show, although it has a lot of the tropes of the cop show.
Yeah.
And they really, it's hermetically sealed. And it's important that it is, because they don't show them pulling their guns when they shouldn't. And every so often, there is a storyline. Like, there was recently a storyline about where they're trying to rehabilitate the image of the NYPD.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, yeah, they're cops. Because it does have such a workplace sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
Also, because it is an ensemble, and because the tension between Holt and Peralta and the rest of the squad is so gentle, that tension exists within the ensemble, within the precinct, and the real plot-driven conflict comes from outside. So it's enemies from outside, which is kind of surprising, only three seasons in, that's the dynamic that we've kind of settled into. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, as Mike mentioned, they are mixing and matching all these members of this ensemble to kind of show, and so they kind of bounce off each other and you can kind of see new sides of them. I like the mixing. I'm not crazy about the matching. We've had Boyle plus Rosa. We've had Boyle plus Gina. And we've got Jake plus Amy. And I'm not seeing a lot of sparks there. In terms of chemistry,
right,
it does feel like narratively imposed. Like, here's, let's figure out what happens now, which is perfectly valid. I'm just surprised to see it happening at the beginning of season three.
Yeah, and I did not have the reaction with Jake and Amy that you would with, like, Jim and Pam on The Office. I don't necessarily want those crazy kids to get together. And as for Boyle and anyone, I don't want to see it.
Yeah,
I think that's like everybody, though. Everybody does, you know, he's so sort of sex crazed and he's like this foodie romantic and yet kind of gross and crass at the same time. I think they're playing that as he doesn't really pair with anyone perfectly. And I think that's where the, you know, Joe LaTriglia plays that so well, I think.
I like Jake and Amy. I like that relationship. I do buy them.
I love both those actors.
But the Boyle stuff has always been complicated for me. And the complication of the Boyle stuff started for me. He's sort of the bumbling office weirdo. And when he was introduced, the driving thing about that character was that he was obsessed with this other character, Rosa, and absolutely was unable to hear her say, no, I don't want to go out with you. I'm not interested. And was sort of obsessively pursuing her.
Right.
And we actually had at Press Tour a session, a panel with the writers and the cast of this show. And I asked the question. I said, this was between season one and season two, how long that's funny.
Right.
Because at some point, if you really had a guy who was this unwilling to take no for an answer from a woman at work, that becomes unfunny to me. Mm-hmm. And it becomes, I think, unfunny to a lot of people, but maybe particularly a lot of women. On the one hand, the producers kind of blew it off. They kind of like chuckled and said, like, well, it's obvious that it comes from, like, he's not a threatening person.
Right. She can certainly hold her own. She's kind of a badass
on the show, too.
At the same time, by the beginning of season two, they immediately started to pull away from it.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. It's clear that by the time I asked that question, they were well into pulling away from that and retreating from it. But that was an example to me of the entire, I think, reason we're talking about this show, which is kind of the phenomenon of watching a show kind of get on its feet.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that they have to do sometimes is walk away from some of the premises of the way they set up those characters.
I think, if anything, that does at least illuminate like one aspect of his personality, which is like this kind of endless romanticism or positivity and like this loyalty to his friends, whether it's him and Jake or him and Rosa. Like, they've actually become close friends at this point. And I think this show, more than Parks and Rec, really kind of tamps down most of the romance, I would say. It's there, but it's not certainly as front and center as Ben and Leslie Knope,
right,
you know, on Parks and Rec.
One of the things that has surprised me about this show is that when it was premiering, and Alan Sepinwall wrote something about this recently in connection with an episode that they did that revolved around a serial killer. But one of the questions that we had, I think a lot of the critics that I knew when the show started, was, how are you going to do comedy around crime?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I find interesting, this show is not a cringe comedy. It's not a kind of ugly, bad person comedy, which is a lot of what comedy is right now on television.
Mm-hmm.
It is fundamentally a show about people you're supposed to like Parks and Rec, like The Office. But at the same time, it deals with this very dark world. I mean, they do a lot of property crime. They don't do murder every week.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's a lot of capers.
They don't do murder every week by any means. And so it's interesting that the show, on the one hand, doesn't have the interpersonal darkness, but has vast darkness just outside the boundaries of what's going on in the show.
But they also keep within their world several sources of just joy and light. Mm-hmm. And so you're constantly getting these infusions of Terry Jeffords is maybe my favorite character on TV right now.
Yeah, Terry Crews.
The wonderful, wonderful Terry Crews, yeah. Who's such a big goofball. Chelsea Peretti as Gina, mm-hmm. who brings so much
weirdness,
weird, quirky energy yeah. that is constantly bouncing off the other characters in surprising ways. Even Scully and Hitchcock, who, you know, the two kind of lazy old,
as Mike said, side cops.
Side cops. They're the cilantro. You know, they're mm-hmm. there to occasionally be doing something doofy for 10 seconds, land a punchline, and then just yeah. bounce to another character. Yeah. They have the ratio of these characters. They get almost entirely right, except I think I feel like there's a little too much boil.
The other thing that I would add to your kind of they bring in a lot of joy and light on a regular basis is how good of a job they've done creating some of those recurring people who only show up mm-hmm. now and then. Mm-hmm. Craig Robinson playing the Pontiac Bandit. Mm-hmm. Patton Oswalt is the fire chief.
Yeah.
And most of those, to me, have been winners, right? Yeah. And they're people that you look at and you say, they could bring that person back in anytime.
Right.
Bradley Whitford, who played Jake's dad.
Yeah. Speaking of great casting.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Dean Winters, who played Dennis Duffy on 30 yep. Rock, who plays this guy that they call the Vulture.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And he's kind of doing the thing
he's
does.
Basically doing what he has done in the Mayhem commercials yep. and yep. Dennis Duffy.
But it's a meaner version of Dennis Duffy.
It is, if that's possible. Mm-hmm. A more bullying version.
A more bullying version of Dennis Duffy. I think it's less whiny, more bullying.
And one area where this show for me really crosses over with the experience of watching Parks and Rec is that I find myself protective of these characters mm-hmm. and a little too much meanness from outside forces, whether it's Wunsch, who's played by Kira Sedgwick, or the Vulture, played by Dean Winters. I tend to kind of get my back up and not want too much of that conflict
yeah.
because it's such a light, comfort foodie show. I was so relieved as in this season as they started to shift away from a little too much of those outside forces.
Yeah. Yeah, and speaking of outside forces, the format of the show, this is one of the things that took me a while to warm up to, is there's a lot of cutaways, which increases the joke density, just quick mm-hmm. little bits. But that's the format of Family Guy, and that's something I kind of like shy against. But then I realized, oh, Family Guy does a reference when it goes away, and these guys do a joke. It's a big difference.
Yes. They do a joke. And I will say, I think this show has maybe right now the strongest cold opens anybody
for sure.
in television. In a cold open in which they are betting on what is keeping Amy from being to work on time. And the end of that cold open was something that I immediately looked at and everybody said, well, that's going to be a gift. That's going to be a Vine, which yep. it immediately was. Mm-hmm. I think that was my moment of just absolutely falling in love with this show.
For me, one of the things is like we've talked in the past about like recurring episodes of a show, mm-hmm. like the Halloween episodes mm-hmm. of Roseanne
yeah.
or the Halloween episodes of The Simpsons. Mm-hmm. The Halloween episodes of this show. Mm-hmm. There have been three of them now, and each one involves a competition between Jake and Ray Holt. They're trying to prove that they can outsmart each other by stealing.
Yeah.
In the first couple, Jake is trying to steal something from Ray Holt, and Ray Holt is trying to thwart him.
Right.
They have managed to escalate those each season, and back to back to back, those are just so wonderfully fun. Like, as long as this show stays on air, I am looking forward to Halloween, in part because I am looking forward to the Halloween episode
of
this
show. It's like Bar Wars.
I was just going to say, it's like the Bar Wars. Yep. It's this battle of wits that just keeps escalating.
And it's also one of those times when they kind of dispense with the notion that this is actually a working precinct.
Right.
And just go for the comedy.
Yeah, there's no crime on Halloween.
No crime on Halloween. All right, well, I look forward to hearing what all of you think about Brooklyn Nine-Nine. If you're not checking it out, I do encourage you to watch it. It's available on Hulu and some other places. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me at Linda Holmes. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, Glenn at G.H. Weldon, and Mike at Mike Katziff. You can follow our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy. And we will see you right back here on Friday.
If you love this show, then check out Life Kit, tools to help you get it together. Learn everything from how to invest your money to how to get in an effective workout. Check it out in Apple Podcasts or at npr.org/lifekit.